A very good morning to everyone. Our first case this morning is number 054418 and related cases, St. John's United Church of Christ against the City of Chicago et al. Mr. Karganis.
Good morning, Your Honors. If I may be allowed to bring water to the podium, I've got a sinus infection this morning.
Providing it's not gin, go ahead.
I wish it were. Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Joseph Karganis, and I represent St. John's United Church of Christ and what have been characterized as the St. John's religious appellants. I would like to, if I may, reserve at a minimum of 5 minutes for rebuttal, but at this point I'd like to proceed. I was struck yesterday by a comment Judge Alito made in his opening statement on confirmation, stating as follows: there is nothing more important to our republic than the rule of law. The rule of law is what this case is all about. We'd like to make several central points. One, the 2003 Section 30 amendment to the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which stripped the special protection of Illinois RFRA from two religious cemeteries adjacent to O'Hare, while leaving the protection in place for every other religious institution in the state of Illinois, is neither a neutral law nor a law of general applicability. As such, under the controlling case law, Section 30 violates the First Amendment Free Exercise Clause. Contrary to the district court decision below, there is no requirement of animus or bad motive in order to establish a free exercise violation.
Mr. Karganis, let me just ask you why we ought to be looking only at Section 30 and not the O'Hare Modernization Act as a whole, which certainly suggests to me that what the Illinois General Assembly was doing was trying to clear the way for O'Hare to be modernized and to use the terms of the Massachusetts against Board of Retirement against Feeney, interfered, as it were, with the cemeteries, not because they were religious or because they were cemeteries, but in spite of the fact. I mean, there are all sorts of other businesses. There are parks, there are private homes.
Certainly.
There are all kinds of people, if this project goes forward, who will be profoundly affected.
Your Honor, you're absolutely right. There are all kinds of people other than religious
who will be affected.
So
there's no discrimination in that sense against religion. Religion is being treated the same as homeowners, the same as parks, the same as businesses.
With all due respect, Your Honor, that's not the case.
Why?
All other people are being treated, not property owners, non-religious, are being treated equally. That's absolutely right.
But the only other cemeteries, they're all subject to eminent domain, right?
But the only other people, or the only people who have protection of the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act, are religious institutions. The other people have no such protection.
What if there were a church in the area, and an actual sanctuary in the area to be covered by the O'Hare Modernization Project? Is it your position that the state of Illinois or the city of Chicago has no power of eminent domain over churches?
I would assume
they have.
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. What would have happened had they not passed Section 30 is a very simple process. They would have had to demonstrate, per the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act, that the condemnation of that church and the injury to that church passed the test set forth in the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Absolutely. They could do it, but they'd have to follow the Illinois RFRA, and that they didn't like. But they went down to Springfield and literally chopped down what has been called a thicket of laws.
What if the O'Hare Modernization Act had said no cemetery in the state of Illinois shall enjoy protection under this statute, period?
All right. Your Honor, I think if they were religious institutions, that in and of itself would raise First Amendment concerns for the distinction between religious cemeteries and other religious institutions.
But cemeteries aren't religious.
No, but the only cemeteries to which RFRA applies are religious. And that's the rub. In other words, RFRA, Illinois RFRA, only protects, and it's stated so in Chicago's brief, only protects religious institutions. It doesn't protect secular cemeteries. It doesn't protect any secular religions.
But your position seems to me to also have another difficult implication, which is once a state has decided to give a religious institution more protection than the federal constitution requires if we accept the employment division against Smith as binding precedent, which certainly we have to, that it can never roll that back again. Now, maybe you have an equal protection issue there, but in terms of a rollback, I don't see why a state is frozen forever into a particular level of protection.
The state of Illinois in 2003 could have repealed the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act without any constitutional implications.
Right, and so apart from equal protection, why couldn't they repeal part
of it? Because the First Amendment has a component that says if the repeal is not neutral and is not a repeal of general applicability, to use the court's example, of all cemeteries, all religious cemeteries, if it's not a neutral repeal, then it runs afoul of the First Amendment, not just the Equal Protection Clause.
But there's no indication. I come back to the other point. There's no real indication in the O'Hare Modernization Act of hostility toward religion. And your brief kind of slides right over Locke against Davy, as well as some language in Lukumi that seems to me you need to confront.
If I may, Your Honor, one, the distinction and a concurring opinion by Justice Scalia.
It's a concurring opinion.
I understand.
Not
it's been
the opinion of the
It's
court.
Been adopted by this court in DeMa.
Well, look, I mean, Locke against Davy is what this court needs
to
look at.
If I may address Locke v. Davy. Locke v. Davy, and we say in our reply brief, is literally sui generis. And why is that? Because there was as the court characterized its analysis, there was a need for a play in the joints between the Establishment Clause of the Washington State Constitution, which is what the state of Washington was purportedly addressing, and the Free Exercise Clause. And it was that play in the joints situation which we believe makes Locke sui generis. I think the case law...
So we're supposed to disregard language in Locke where the Supreme Court talks about animus?
I think if you have two potentially in conflict constitutional provisions, which is what the case was in Locke, namely the Washington State Establishment Clause versus the Free Exercise Clause of the First Amendment, and out of respect for the under federalism for the state constitution, I think the court was forced to come up with what we refer to as a sui generis application.
But, you know, it seems to me you could make that argument if you wanted to the Supreme Court, and more power to you. But when the language in Locke says, far from evincing the hostility toward religion, which was manifest in Lukumi, and in Lukumi, they talk about the object of the law, something undertaken, you know, for religious reasons and so on. Boy, it seems like a lower court judge has got to pay attention to this hostility rationale.
If I may, on Lukumi, Your Honor, I'll come back to Locke. On Lukumi, the court says this is at a minimum what will trigger First Amendment free exercise protection. In other words, we're not suggesting that hostility can't trigger a free exercise violation, but we're saying it is not a necessary element of a free exercise violation. And I think that's a very important distinction. Otherwise, you're going to have to go, as Justice Scalia said, into discovery about the motive and intent of legislators all over the country. That's not what the Free Exercise Clause calls for. And that's not what the Smith decision, which is what all of these statutes were all about, said. And one of the ironies of this is that the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act, which is what was stripped from these two cemeteries, specifically negates any need to establish bad motive in order to get the protection of that statute.
Could I ask you, I'm sorry for jumping around here, but this is, I don't want to, and if you want to save this for a minute, that would be fine. But if we were to agree with you that the standards of the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act were to apply, and you would agree that takes you over into compelling interest, least restrictive alternative, what I would like your comment on is how this case relates to the litigation pending before the D.C. Circuit, if you could enlighten us.
If I may, Your Honor, and I hate to go outside this argument, but we filed a brief per the court's directive in the companion cases yesterday, which specifically says, one, that the case that involves federal RFRA with respect to the federal government is, under Article 3, required to be tried in a district court. In other words, the federal RFRA claim.
Right, maybe I wasn't clear. As I understand the litigation that's pending before the D.C. Circuit, it's the administrative appeal that goes to the D.C. Circuit from the FAA's action, And as I understand it, one of the issues that's going to be presented is precisely this issue, whether a compelling interest and whether least restrictive alternative have been shown. If you look at the ROD, where the FAA talks about all of this at some length.
In our appeal in that case, Your Honor, we're going to be arguing exactly as we do here, that this is not a matter for administrative decision-making. In other words,
I understand that, but generically, it is an issue before the D.C. Circuit. They may agree with your point. They may not from a procedural standpoint, will be asked to decide this?
Without overcomplicating things, there is one appeal in the D.C. Circuit in which the FAA has not contested the D.C. Circuit's jurisdiction. There is a second judicial review proceeding that the D.C. that the FAA is saying it doesn't have any jurisdiction, which would always, again, bring this back.
Oh, they're saying it's premature, right?
Well, it's saying it's premature, but there may be bases for jurisdiction in the district courts. Our position in both courts is that with regard to the First Amendment claims against the City of Chicago and the federal RFRA claims against the FAA, jurisdiction lies in the district court. Per the command of Congress, if you look at the parallel causes of action given, for example, in federal RFRA versus federal RLUIPA, these are district court actions, and the whole process is for district court actions.
And the answer you're giving me, which is, you know, in itself interesting, is on the merits, but I guess I'm trying to also get a sense of how we two courts are working together, or at cross purposes,
If I may, the jurisdiction. One of the reasons we're in the D.C. Circuit is the D.C. Circuit has, a year ago, issued a earlier opinion on federal funding of this project, which relates to the issues we're raising with the D.C. Circuit, and that's why the reason we filed it in the D.C. Circuit. The First Amendment claims against the City of Chicago are, by definition, we didn't have in personam jurisdiction in the District Court for the District of Columbia, so we brought it here. It's just that simple. And you're right. The courts are going to have to, in some fashion, be sensitive to the decisions of each court. If I may, I mentioned animus. The equal protection claim, if there is a First Amendment violation, there is an equal protection violation here. I think both we and the City of Chicago agree on the basic point that if there's a fundamental violation, if the differential treatment is based on a fundamental constitutional violation, or if one religion is treated differently than another religion or other religions, there's an Equal Protection Act violation. The OMA and the question of whether or not the OMA is a land use regulation, we've treated that extensively in the briefs, and the court's going to have to decide whether or not a change in the land use, which there are multiple changes in the land use within the OMA, is a quote-unquote zoning regulation. The case law, which has not been challenged by the City of Chicago, says that when you have a control of land use or how land is used, that's a zoning statute.
But I'm not familiar, with anything that equates eminent domain, which is a fundamental governmental power to pay somebody and change property ownership, with what's commonly referred to as land use control, zoning, and the like. Those are treated as two different bodies of law, other than the fact that, you know, at some point everything's related to everything. But
And you're right, Your Honor. Land use and eminent domain are really different points on the same continuum. As a matter of fact, land use can morph into eminent domain, as we've seen in a number of situations.
Well, there can be inverse condemnation cases. There can be. The Supreme Court has tried to draw that but it's a line they draw.
There is a two-step analysis here. First of all, is there a land use regulation? We believe OMA, fairly read, with its specifics, is a land use regulation.
Well, why is that? If what you're challenging, as I understand, what you don't care about, the rest of maybe other people do, maybe Bensonville does and so on, but your beef isn't with the fact that O'Hare is going to be modernized. If they shut off that runway and left your cemetery alone, you'd be perfectly happy.
Absolutely.
So you're not talking about the land use. You're talking about the condemnation of the cemetery under the city's power of eminent domain.
Let me give another example, which we gave in our brief. Even if there was no condemnation, they basically have changed the law so that they can remove the bodies from St. Johanna's, which are, again, we believe to be religiously protected. They can remove the bodies without our permission, which is a change in the law that has a direct impact, has nothing to do with condemnation,
It does have everything to do with condemnation. I checked, actually. There are not a lot of cases, but there are Illinois cases in which cemeteries have been condemned.
Absolutely.
And I don't understand you to be arguing that there's some per se exemption for cemeteries from the state's condemnation power.
Again, Your Honor, if they hadn't stripped away by Section 30, what they could have done, and they would have done it.
These cases were decided before there was any RFRA
Absolutely.
You asked,
Your Honor, what the distinction is. The distinction is now if they try to come in and move the bodies to the detriment of our religious beliefs, they would have to follow Illinois RFRA. And that was the tree they had to cut down, the legal tree they had to cut down in order to accomplish their objective. And it was that stripping of Illinois RFRA just for these two cemeteries that is the fatal First Amendment flaw in this analysis.
Suppose they had, the Illinois legislature had simply exempted from the Illinois RFRA all cemeteries instead of enacting the Section 30 it did. Where would you stand then?
If they had repealed Illinois RFRA as to all cemeteries, I'm not trying to avoid your question. There would be still a First Amendment question, but it would be far easier for the city of Chicago in that circumstance than it is that they just targeted these two cemeteries. In other words, that they said all religious cemeteries in the state of Illinois shall no longer have the protection, there would have to be some sort of First Amendment analysis of that. But again, they chose not to do that. Had they done so, there might have been a different situation. But I am not, with due respect to the court, conceding that that would not have First Amendment implications.
You're in your rebuttal time, Mr. Cameron.
I'm sorry. I'm now in rebuttal time?
Yep.
I'm sorry. If I may, Your Honor, just one last point. The tests, and one of the things that we're not asking this court to deal with, but the tests of compelling need and alternatives, we believe are factual tests. We believe there is ample material before the court that demonstrates that there are serious questions as to both. The existing O'Hare would do fine, growing to virtually doubling of its traffic per the city of Chicago's own figures. And there are obvious alternatives, including one of the alternatives put forward by Chicago, which would not destroy the cemetery. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Karagas. We'll hear now from Ms. Solomon.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. In order to make crucial improvements to O'Hare Airport, the city must acquire more than 700 homes and businesses and one cemetery. The General Assembly enacted the O'Hare Modernization Act to remove any and all state law impediments to that massive project. This morning, I will explain that the OMA neither targets St. John's members' religion nor discriminates against them, but is instead a broad-based statute applicable to all property in the acquisition area.
Why is it appropriate for us to focus on the OMA as a totality as opposed to the repeal or the amendment of RFRA by section, the Illinois RFRA by section 30? Why shouldn't we look just at that as opposed to the OMA in its entirety?
Because the Section 96, of course, was only one of many amendments. There were every law, every statute of the state of Illinois that was perceived to impose a permit requirement, generate litigation, inject delay or cost into the project, was repealed or amended. And this goes all the way from the Downstate Forest Preserve Act to the Code of Civil Procedure. There is now quick take that we don't need a certificate of approval from the state. Every single impediment that the mind could conceive of, including a cause of action under Illinois RFRA, they were all repealed or amended, and the OMA itself is a neutral law of general applicability. It applies to all property in the acquisition area, and it was intended to, and it does, in fact, remove every single restriction that could have stood in the way of the project. It is, for that reason, subject to rational basis review under both the Free Exercise Clause and the Equal Protection Clause.
Doesn't that create a situation, though, where one could hide a discriminatory statute in an omnibus bill like that and get away with it, in effect?
There is no evidence here of any intent to hide any discrimination. The thing that's so important here is the amendment to Illinois RFRA. As Judge Wood points out, the statute only applies to religious institutions in the first instance. Whenever it is amended, including an amendment that just says, you know what, we made a mistake when we enacted it. We never should have put cemeteries into it. Look at all this litigation we now have about cemeteries. The effect of that language, had that been enacted instead, and I understand counsel didn't concede it, but he doesn't have to because there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. The effect of that language would actually be the very same as the effect of the language that was enacted. And that's why I say there's nothing being hidden here. The language enacted here, nothing in this act limits the authority of the City of Chicago to exercise its powers under the O'Hare Modernization Act for purposes of relocation of cemeteries or the graves located therein. There are only two cemeteries that we have to exercise our power against. It could have amended Illinois RFRA to repeal its application to all cemeteries. That actually would have had a far broader effect on religion. There would be serious claims why it would be done that way, but what was done was absolutely neutral. It was one part of a general omnibus bill. There is no evidence of any hostility to any religion. There is
no except if you happen to have a cemetery at the end of the active runway at Champaign-Urbana.
But that runway.
And if they want to expand that, they've got the protection of RFRA.
They do.
These folks up in Chicago do not.
It's so speculative and hypothetical that there's no.
That is the state of the law, though, now in Chicago, is it not? There's been a statute passed by the Illinois legislature that targets two religiously based cemeteries in the suburbs of Chicago and says these people don't have the same protection as any other religious cemetery in the state of Illinois.
With respect, Your Honor, it's not targeting because the statute was directed to any and all property that is in the footprint of an expanded
O'Hare. That's why I asked originally, why do I have to focus on the OMA as opposed to the simple amendment of RFRA. If I look at the amendment of RFRA, it seems to me you've got a huge problem. If I focus on the OMA, I don't. That's my worry.
Well, to focus on that one section actually ignores the clear legislative intent here. It is, you know, probably going to be easy to find targeting or discrimination whenever the myopia is applied to a few specific words in a statute.
My myopia is focusing on are the words that deal with a religious institution.
Well, the word.
And I'm not worried about what else they've got to move. I am worried about how the disparate treatment of religious institutions in the state of Illinois.
Well, again, Your Honor, the neutrality exists unless the object of the law is to restrict practices because of the religious motivation. And that is a direct quote out of Lukumi. There was nothing, there was no indication in the statute, and there is not even an allegation in this case that the amendment, the specific section of the OMA dealing with the cemeteries and the amendment to Illinois RFRA was because of any religious motivation. There is no indication.
Trouble is in Lukumi, we weren't talking about similarly situated entities. Here we are. I mean, we're talking about religious cemeteries in the state of Illinois. And two are not being treated like everybody else.
With respect, Your
Honor,
that's
a far cry from the situation in Lukumi.
We would disagree with that, Your Honor, for the reason that no other religious cemetery is in the footprint of O'Hare. Every piece of property within the footprint of O'Hare is treated the same, and they are treated differently from property that
that's
is
crucial.
Not.
That's crucial to your case, is it not? I mean, I have really got to accept that.
Well, yes, Your Honor, but it is the I'm sorry.
No, please.
The O'Hare Modernization Act dealt with state law restrictions, impediments, permit requirements, certificates of approval, etc., that would delay, impede, add to the cost of the O'Hare Modernization Program. It's the only thing the legislature considered. If the airport in Champaign is going to be modernized, that's a separate piece of legislation. perhaps they'll go the same way with that. But it is crucial, and there is no object here that can be discerned directed against the religious sin. The statute doesn't even use the word religion.
If I may ask one follow-up, and then I'll let I'll let you alone and my colleagues as well, and let them ask questions if they have any. Can you point to any precedent in the Supreme Court's case law, at least, that would support your view that I should be looking at the OMA as opposed to simply at the amendment to section or the addition of section 30 of RFRA?
Well, I guess I'd have two responses, and the first is that, of course, in general, statutes are construed as a whole, and that principle should apply here as it does in all other areas of statutory construction. And the second is that what we're looking for under the Supreme Court's cases dealing with neutral laws of general applicability is any indication that a religious institution or a religious entity or a religion itself, religious practice, has been targeted for specific adverse treatment. It doesn't have to be hostility per se, but it does have to be targeting. And this statute, the findings are replete. It's Section 5 of the Act. We set them out in our brief, and the statute is in the appendix as well. It goes through why the OMA was being considered and why it was being enacted. It is unfortunate, to say the least, that the cemetery is where it is and that the runway is going where it's going. But there is nothing targeted at religion. Judge Wood asked the question concerning any amendment to Illinois RFRA, and wouldn't that raise the same questions? The only precedent that we're aware of is at the far end, cases like Hunter against Erickson or Romer against Evans, where a repealer itself disadvantages the protected group. That's just not this case. This amendment, in its effect, is no different from one that did exempt all cemeteries, all religious cemeteries, from Illinois RFRA. They never had to be covered to begin with, and it would raise no free exercise cause of action, no free exercise violation, to amend the statute to withdraw the protection from religious cemeteries. Rather than that broader impact, the legislature did limit it because that was what they were aiming at. That was the aim of this particular piece of legislation. The statute may have limited applicability, but as in the Pro-Eco case, where the statute reaches everything that the legislature believes is the problem, that's what we mean by general applicability. And these same considerations govern the church's equal protection claim. Indeed, the church presses that claim only to say that if there is a free exercise violation, there is also an equal protection violation, but it lays claim to a suspect classification, again, only on the basis of this one section of the OMA. But that focus is no more appropriate on the equal protection claim than it is on the free exercise claim.
Ms. Solomon, let me ask you, if you did have to move into the world of RFRA, Illinois RFRA, and you had to show a compelling interest and you had to show least restrictive alternatives, where would you be then? Mr. Karaganis insists that the only way to resolve these issues would be at a trial. We
would start with substantial burden, to be honest, Your Honor. Of course, success on the free exercise and the equal protection claim in this case would simply give it, that doesn't get the cemetery anything. It gives them back their cause of action under Illinois RFRA. It doesn't get them relief. They then have the cause of action, which they would have to pursue, starting with substantial burden. And we do make that argument in our brief. So we would start with substantial burden, of course, before moving on to the other issues. By the time you start getting into those other issues, of course, you do end up right smack where the D.C. Circuit is currently considering the FAA's ruling that the O'Hare Modernization Plan demonstrates a compelling governmental interest and furthers that interest by the least restrictive means. The D.C. Circuit will decide that question. We don't believe it's appropriate to decide it here or on an Illinois RFRA claim.
Well, the record of decision goes into that at some length. That's why I was asking about
it. It does,
the
to
relation.
Be sure, Your Honor.
And Chicago has intervened in that. Is that correct?
We have. We
so
have.
They're there, too.
The briefing schedule is going to be adjusted a little bit because of the second appeal in the D.C. Circuit, but all the briefs will be filed this spring in that case. Again, the equal protection claim fails because although the effect may fall on one religious institution, that is actually because it's the only institution in the footprint of O'Hare, not because it's targeted and not because of religion. It is in spite of the religious elements. And, of course, with the rational basis test, the church actually does not even make that argument. Modernizing O'Hare is obviously rational, and the church accepts that. Turning then to the Arlupa claim, that statute is quite clear as well. It applies only to a land use regulation, which is defined under the statute as a zoning or landmarking law. Neither the OMA itself nor the city's plan to condemn and acquire the cemetery is a zoning law, much less a landmarking law. These are terms with obvious meaning, and they are just as obviously different from eminent domain. By common understanding, as Your Honor discussed earlier, eminent domain refers to the ability of the government to appropriate private property for its own use upon payment of just compensation. Zoning refers to the ability of the government to restrict the use of property in the hands of the private owner without paying just compensation.
Ms. Solomon, this may be a bit wide of the mark, but in the city's brief, there are representations about the procedures that the city would follow if it were to go through with this condemnation, if you prevail and so forth. And, in fact, some of the earlier Illinois cases that I saw dealing with condemnation of cemeteries struggle with the issue of how you figure out just compensation on a fair market value basis. Are you making these representations about how this would be handled because of some legal compulsion, or is this just the city's offer to St. John's, is that you would do this in the appropriate, dignified manner, et cetera?
There is a memorandum of agreement attached as Exhibit B, I believe, to the ROD. It's in our supplemental appendix. In this case, the court can find the undertakings. We signed it. The FAA signed it. The church did not. So those undertakings are not simply our gestures at this point. They are obligations that we have committed to and signed on the dotted line for that.
Okay.
As far as the valuation, although Your Honor did not directly ask that, we have, of course, been enjoined, and we will not acquire legal title. But the balance of the procedures will be guided by state law through a condemnation case, a condemnation proceeding in the Circuit Court of DuPage County. The argument that is made here is the highly rhetorical one, that condemnation is the ultimate limitation on the use of property and that it stripped away all protections and all land use protections against moving bodies. But the statute doesn't deal with all limitations on the use of property. It deals with zoning and land use, zoning and landmark laws that limit the use of the property. We are not limiting St. John's use of the property. We are intending to and preparing to, when we have all the legal green lights, to condemn and acquire the property and thereafter to relocate the graves. That is simply cannot, on any plain meaning of the words, be deemed a zoning law or even a zoning-type law. Because of the sovereign implications, because of the backdrop of Arlupa, we do say in our brief that the statute must be strictly construed according to its terms. We cite Gregory against Ashcroft, and the church responds, oh, but there are grant funds, so Gregory does not apply. But Pennhurst makes quite clear that grants must be just as specific as statutes themselves, and there is no grant obligation, no grant condition of any kind that requires the city to refrain from condemning the cemetery, to meet a strict scrutiny test if it condemns the cemetery.
Ms. Solomon, the Eisenhower Expressway went through five cemeteries. Six. Was there not some litigation there that is available for investigators? That's, of course, long before we had the Illinois Acts on the subject, but I'm
not familiar with that process, Your Honor.
See, there's only a few of us who are alive and kicking at that.
Well, we will certainly look into that. What we are aware of is that St. John's Church itself was moved for a prior piece of O'Hare expansion. That's actually why I'm going a little beyond the record, but it is in answer to your question. That is why it's not located next to the cemetery any longer. My understanding is the religious claims were just not put forward at that time. It was, to be sure, before the statutes, but it was when the free exercise...
Well, the religious claims certainly in the Eisenhower Expressway program are...
Well, the free exercise clause itself was different then, so the claims could have been made directly under the Constitution. But the research we have done, the public documents we have reviewed, the claim was not made. In any event, we would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Solomon. Mr. Karaganis has how long? Thank you.
If I may begin by directing the court's attention to a question asked by Judge Wood about whether or not there were commitments to follow certain procedures. If the court would observe at the city's appendix, page 101, the memorandum of agreement, you'll find a termination clause in this agreement that basically says that the City of Chicago unilaterally, on 30 days' notice, can terminate the commitment. That is the kind of protection that was referred to by the City of Chicago. It is just that very termination at will, essentially, that is the reason why the Rest Haven appellants are pursuing their appeal. We were told in Rest Haven that don't worry about it, we're going to preserve the cemetery, except we've got a 30-day termination notice that at any point in the future, the city can cancel the commitment. The statement is made, the question was made, every piece of property is being treated the same. If we turn, if I may, to our reply brief, we quote the City of Chicago repeatedly on this, and it says the reason they're being treated the same, and we quote their statement in the response to the motion for summary reversal, is because by removing the benefits of Illinois RFRA might give them over other property owners. Everybody in that zone isn't the same. The cemeteries have a special legal protection that was conferred by the Illinois legislature. The other property owners don't have that. By bringing us down a level so as we don't have that protection anymore is certainly not equal treatment. It's stripping us of a fundamental right that's been given to us by the Illinois legislature.
But it isn't Judge Ripple right. I mean, the real issue, it all boils down to the perspective that needs to be taken, because what the city certainly means is if you're in the O'Hare footprint, you are going to have to yield to O'Hare. Now, that would be the same. Now, as you point out, there's Section 30, and there's a different level of generality, or there are probably other ways. Maybe some landmark building that's going to be taken already had a protection, and it doesn't have it anymore. So don't we need to get some legal guidance on the appropriate perspective?
Again, if these were not religious institutions...
No, you're not answering the question. The question is what principle of law tells you which is the proper perspective, as I think Judge Ripple put it a few minutes ago.
If I may, Your Honor, I think you ought to look at all of the statutes as they're modified. So look at the Illinois Religious Freedom Restoration Act with the new Section 30 in it. Go to the other statutes that are modified.
Why?
Because OMA, for most of it, is a simple omnibus list of bills that are struck down, of laws that are struck down. The laws, as changed, are the laws that they refer to. So go to the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. If I might, Your Honor, you asked a question about what the FAA decision is going to be. The FAA says in its documents that the City of Chicago can make a different decision than the FAA. It can do what Los Angeles and Boston have done, or what it did in 1984. So it has a freedom of choice far different than the federal government's, according to the federal government. And that's a different issue then as to whether or not there are alternatives available. Los Angeles has chosen an alternative that wouldn't destroy. Boston has chosen an alternative that wouldn't destroy in terms of surrounding environmental concerns. Chicago can make that same choice, and that goes right to the heart of First Amendment protection. As far as the condemnation goes, Your Honor, we're saying that's an implementation of RLUIPA. Thanks very much.
Our thanks to both counsel for very fine briefs and a very fine oral argument this morning. The case will be taken under advisement.